So there's a saying in my lab. Oh, I forgot this thing. I need to eject it. Let me say, it's all about the roots. So I'm a rootstock reader. I don't know how many of you know about what rootstocks are, but I'm not going to introduce them that much. But we breed upper rootstocks. It's a long-term breeding program. It started in 1968 when I wasn't even born. And I've got a lot of good collaborators, some who have passed away, like Charlie, that have worked a lot of things. So roots and rootstocks, they perform in a very, very complex environment. In the soil, we have the interaction with sign varieties, climate, diseases, insects, and then, of course, the orchard management, or what I like to call tractor blight. And all of that, all of those interactions need to be accounted for, try to be accounted for whenever we release a new variety. We evaluate several traits, and they, like in the greenhouse, like fire blight resistance, Phytophthora, woolly apple aphids, and so on and so forth. Rooting is one of them because it's a propagation trait that for stool bedding. But that's becoming more less relevant as in vitro culture is taking over or taking place. The frustration is that many of these traits are evaluated on a secondary level. We evaluate most of the things on the scion growth, fruit quality, and so we think about rootstocks and what they do. And I go back to basically root systems and their functions. So we've done a lot of work in trying to understand the functions of the root by measuring things up in the scion part. And we've done tree nutrition. Many years ago, or when I started my job, people used to say, there is no effect of rootstocks on fruit quality. I proved wrong. And now, the big thing is rootstocks effects on fruit quality, because we see some problems with like bitter pit or other soft called and other things that are showing up in only certain rootstocks or exacerbated by certain rootstocks. So we have effects of the roots, the rootstocks, on, for example, fruit weight. And they're very significant in major things. So we've done experiments, again, measuring things in the scion, using the same growth or media treatments, and have come up with, I think it's the first paper on genetic inheritance of tree fruit nutrition or mineral nutrition in tree fruits, and that was interesting. It said, okay, fine. We know all of these loci and so on and so forth. But how are they connected to what the roots do, or how can I understand better what the roots do, and how can I figure out what gene this is? And so we had to do, I started doing shovel omics. We had an interest in learning the specific physiology of roots, because we wanted to select for good things, or good type of roots, or roots that had the genetic, good genetic background. So, We started observing that the rootstocks had very diverse canopy architecture, and then some adventitious root systems for green lights were different from the commercial lines. So the root systems basically were different phenotypically. And then we had important traits that are associated with root architecture, like anchorage, soil exploration, and drought tolerance, and so on and so forth. So we wanted to do more work on phenotyping roots. There was also this fine root trait that was unique to our breeding program, and it wasn't in any other breeding program in the world, or any other material in the world. So This is the typical root system of an M9 when it's in propagation. And these are some of our rootstocks, G935, G214, like that. So we wanted to understand a little bit more like that and whether, is it really worth it doing selection. So this is the evolution. And I'll show a bunch of pictures. I'll do it kind of in a hurry. But we started by taking images of nursery trees. Then we move it to potted trees, and for dual use, we'd use, we'd wash the roots and then measure the nutrients in the scion. And then we built rhizotrons, which was Mark I, that used the BARS camera that the Laxo Lab offered to us. And then we used inert media to grow RNA quality roots because we couldn't quite extract good quality RNA and to understand what genes were good. And then from that, we got good RNA, somewhat good RNA in herb media, but still I wasn't satisfied. And so we tested several commercially available aeroponic systems, and that has been kind of like transformative in our program. But at the same time, we also built more bin rhizotrons, Mark II, that utilized the C600 system with still maintaining the tube size compatible with the WARS camera, which was important. And I'll show a few pictures of those. And finally, we developed a three-zone aeroponic system, which will be expanding soon to something a bit bigger, as you'll see. So the next few slides are just going to be pictures of things. So we take data every year on rootstock minor quality, and we observe how many root initiations we have, and also, what type of root system we see. So we have that kind of historical data. Again, chevalomics. We did chevalomics for drought tolerance. We're looking at treatments drought treatments years ago, and you do that, but you're still not figuring out real time what was going on. These are pictures from a segregating population that started me out with the idea that, okay, we do have in our breeding population that represents 90% of our released rootstocks, we do have segregation for root morphology traits, and so this was the very first chevalomics type thing, and we went with WinRhizo, and we also characterized a little bit later wild populations of apples, and we were taking pictures of the whole tree, including the roots, and we took root and scion data, and yes, we found some interesting things and selected some good parents. But still, this was another type of chevalomics that just took a massive amount of work and it still didn't give us what I wanted, which is markers and physiology and understanding of the whole thing. We kind of took that, that idea of chevalomics, and we repeated the same experiment with the same germplasm, and this time imaging it for morphology. We used WinRhizo, like some of you have used, and quantified everything. And finally, we got some what we call QTLs, or something that was significant as far as genetic segregation. And so now we had something that we could work with as far as breeding. Could develop markers to select for. And interestingly, this location, as you'll maybe see later, that's similar to the location of Dorfing 2 in Apple. We were having perhaps a dwarfing gene that wasn't just affecting the scion, but it was affecting the root growth. And that has to be studied. Of course, for me, the idea is to do marker-assisted breeding for difficult traits like root morphology. It'd be nice to have a marker that I could deploy on the population, you know, as far as parents, that has the right phenotype, or that will have the right predictive phenotype. So we went a little bit further, and I mentioned that we did also an initial experiment in the same segregating population with gene expression QTLs or EQTLs from perlite grown roots. And we've obtained, you could see some segregation, but you couldn't see quite the phenotype that I'm going to show you in a few minutes. But we obtained quite a large database as far as EQTLs, which we are in the process of using and mining for interesting genes going from the phenylpropanoid pathway to disease-resistant genes and to architecture genes. And we have come up with a few candidates for architecture, but that's to be seen. We also used it, you know, again, some chevalonic types to work with replant disease. And I have to give my hands to Darius, who did all of the chevalonics work, because he counted a lot of roots and a lot of trees. But finally, it was good. So I had an idea, and I said, you know, we got to make things easier as far as collection of data, and also make the data a little bit more meaningful than just putting one tube in under one tree and then figuring out, you know, going in and so on and so forth. So I said, I want to do this a little bit more intensively. And this is the Rhizotron Mark I, which I used to simulate a stool bed, or, you know, what you would see the plant density of a stool bed. And I had several known apple rootstocks and some of our releases. And then what I wanted to do is compare the dynamics of growth and also see if I could measure lateral angle depth because of the arrangement of the tubes and when the roots arrived there and so on and so forth. So, you know, looking at the dynamics and looking at angle. We had angle data before, but it was from, you know, digging up things. This one is, you know, real timed angle data. So we had 67,000 images with the BARTS system, and we had to stitch them by hand, and that was a job for our undergrads. No, actually, high school students. High school students did this. And, you know, they did a good job as far as but so we're still in the process of putting together this manuscript, but it was a lot of work, and it's a lot of data. And I said, there has to be a better way. And then the CI600, so this is the type of data also that you can get, you know, how long the roots persist, and that was important to me. I wanted to know how long the roots persist, our roots versus other breeding programs persisted. And this is essentially the type of data that you see in that. And we'll get that publication done. But then I said, okay, so it's silly. 67,000 images. We want to reduce this. So we went down. We went to the Mark II, the CI600. And what we did is develop this type of arrangement bin, deeper bin. And then every tube has a special code, and we only collect data from certain sections of the tube, so that we could avoid a crosstalk between root systems and so on and so forth. So this is Leif Arcani. This is actually pH experiments. We're testing three different pHs in soil and moving along. But we have a nice setup. We had an engineering student from Alabama come in and work with this, building all of this this past summer. So this picture was taken a few weeks ago. And of course, the beginning of this, and from what I hear, root snap it's not that great, so we'll figure it out. And as part of this system, we're going to integrate this with something that Dr. Daniel Sabo from GTRI introduced me to, which is electrical capacitance tomography. I'm not going to explain the electronics because essentially you can detect a live roost system and the size of the roost system as long as the soil conditions are the same. And you can look at the, you can feel disease. So what I'm going to do is we're going to calibrate those apple root systems that we detect in the rhizotron with this system and see how they correlate. I hope they correlate well. I'm always looking for something better. So in 2015, I was looking around, and I don't know if it was one of your publications or something, and I said, hydroponics doesn't work in apple. We got to be able to do something so that we can observe roots in much better way and be able to get gene expression, morphology, and the growth and be able to manipulate nutrients real time and so on and so forth. And so I went out, bought a bunch of commercial types. Thanks to the cannabis industry, this was the best one out of Colorado. And so that was in 2015. And in 2016, we did a full-scale build where we had three zones, essentially. They have their own water tanks that are circulating, and also they're filtered. We have very tight filters that will filter spores. So when the full-scale build, this is what it looked like when we initially planted it. We have these to reflect the light so that they don't get too hot. And this is what they looked like when we before we collected the material that we sent, some of it which we sent to Rachel for analysis. But we collected material from this experiment for also RNA-seq, which we will be developing more EQTLs. And essentially it works very simply. It's a spray of nutrient water, boom, every 10 seconds, every 2 or 3 minutes, and we're getting some really great growth. So a little bit about the process. I'm going to be quick about this. So Ottawa 3 and Robusta 5 are the two of the parents that we're using. Moly 9 is the parent of Ottawa 3. So now you're getting the phenotypes of the parents. Okay, one mostly feeder roots, and the other ones explorer roots, and the other one feeder roots or fine roots. And this is the type of segregation that we see, and I'm like, ah. Finally, we haven't analyzed this data yet, but you get the idea of so it's not the real soil system that you're impacting with particles and whatever, but it's a step closer to what I want to evaluate and see. I'm after perhaps something like this, or am I after some things, or am I after a different root angle? And you can see that you can very well differentiate the different types of traits. And so we'll be confirming the phenotype of this. As a comparison, this is the same rootstock in perlite versus aeroponics, and also same rootstock in aeroponics versus perlite. I can read this much better than this one. So here's a few pictures from the build, this is, I think, almost the last slide. The scalability is easy. Actually, we bought this tank today, and it will fit entire trees. Okay, so we're going to grow entire trees, have fruit hanging, hopefully, and look at the what's going on when you have this crop load and the fruit are like that, because that's what we want to study. That's the real thing. And we'll also want to do some robotics And now, that, you know, bigger tanks, robotics are possible. So, the treatments that you can do with this type of aeroponics, I don't know, you can ask. I did a drought study when I pulled a plug. and so, you know, you can monitor root gas exchange, respiration, all kinds of stuff. So, having said that, part of this is funded by a NEPA project, which is up a root to fruit. And it's a nice thing that they have done so. And I have many collaborators throughout the world, and I'm grateful for their help. And thank you very much. This was the group last year, and that's what we do.
Okay, very good.